All right, we're in parallel computing world again. Who are you? What's going on here?
All right, my name is Hazem Shafi. I'm the architect on the parallel developer tools team at Microsoft, working on performance tools that we're shipping in Visual Studio 2010. Mm-hmm. I have next to me.
Hi, I'm Sasha Danilov. I'm the lead on the parallel profiler.
Great, and I'm Bill Colburn, and I'm a program manager on the parallel profiler. So we're all here as part of the parallel development tools team.
Excellent, man. I mean, you look familiar because we talked to you about STM.
Yeah, it was STM.
All right, man.
Pretty recent.
Very cool. So, what is this?
This is the way we like to tell people or introduce the tool to people is that this is, for the first time, we're making it easy for people to see the guts, the anatomy of a Windows application and how it's working underneath the layers, all these layers of abstraction in their application.
Nice.
So what that means is that for the first time, at least, we're making it so easy for you to see what's going on underneath all these layers. And specifically, of course, we're targeting someone who's developing a multi-threaded app who's trying to improve its performance.
Okay.
Or someone who wants to take an existing single-threaded app and parallelize it. So we're trying to make it easy for them to understand the degree of parallelism that exists in their application, where their application is serialized, where is it running in parallel, what code was running when it was serialized, what code was running when it was parallel, mm-hmm. and then when it was running in parallel, or in general, throughout its execution, we cover a large set of very common performance bottlenecks like I/O delays, like synchronization overheads, sleeps, things like that. So we believe that we have something special on our hands.
Excellent.
And we can maybe chat about how we've used it internally even.
Sure.
Let's do that.
Yeah, actually, we've had a number of opportunities to use the tool internally to help folks who have come to speak with us. We've worked with the Zune team on their Zune client application, because that's a heavily multi-threaded application, so we've helped them identify some areas where they weren't getting as much parallelism as they expected. We helped them very quickly identify some key problems, and then they picked them up, and I believe they've incorporated some of those improvements in the latest version of the Zune client. Mm-hmm. We've also worked with some other folks internally, especially within the parallel computing team, who are building demonstration applications to try and show our customers, here's some ideas of parallel challenges and how to go about them. And some of the demos that our program managers have been writing, I've sat down with a couple of them and actually used the profiler to help them find some areas where they could significantly improve their scalability.
Awesome. Visual Studio itself.
Yeah, and Visual Studio as well. We've actually helped with a couple minor components of Visual Studio, so it's pretty exciting.
That's excellent. Yeah. And just so people know in the audience, you guys are going to make some screencasts where devs can get beta to 2010 mm-hmm. and actually play with this and learn. Many developers have two monitors these days.
Yeah. Exactly, which would be great. So they'll be able to run the screencast in one window and run the Visual Studio in the other and hopefully try some of this stuff out. So we're going to work real hard to make sure we've got a few good screencasts out for them to help them see how this thing works and sort of experience it for themselves.
Cool. So one of the things I think is important, I think the word parallelism sometimes is used a little too much, right? You have parallel computation on data, where you take data, split it up, and run things concurrently.
Yes.
And you have, which is the concurrent execution. So
yes.
You guys are talking about both. You're talking about parallelizing, and you're also talking about concurrent execution, specifically.
Yes.
Concurrency and parallelism.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get that out there, because I see a lot of people use parallelism mm-hmm. for everything.
Right.
Well, so in my view, so I'm adding yet another dimension to this.
Good. Well, you're an architect.
Yeah, in my view, there are basically two types of parallelism that are important. One type of parallelism is hiding latency, using parallelism to allow me to hide something that's going to take a long time. So, for example, I'm going to access the disk, but I know that I don't have to wait for the disk to finish, which is what traditional apps do. Hmm. I have some other work that I can do in the meantime. So I can exploit parallelism to hide this latency of disk rather than exposing it to the user and increase response time, for example.
Okay.
That's one way of exploiting parallelism. The other main thing that's happening now that we have multi-core processors is that we now have the ability to partition a job across multiple processors so that the algorithm that used to run on a single core can now be spread across multiple cores, which is going to speed up the computation or shrink the execution time. Mm. And a very common abstraction to leverage to do that kind of a speed up is to exploit data level parallelism, which says that you have a lot of data items and you do the exact same work on all these pieces, so why don't you just divide the work among multiple cores and get the speed up? Another type of parallelism that's also going to become really handy, and our team at large is shipping some really great tools here. You've heard about Concert and PPL.
Absolutely.
And PPL and those things, is task-level parallelism, which is now I can take different pieces of my application, not just different pieces of data, different functions of my application, and run them in parallel, which is a really nice paradigm also to exploit parallelism.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. I mean, it's good to get the basics and the fundamentals out. So now one of the things I remember when we first started, when the whole concurrency sort of concern happened about, I don't know, 5 years ago is when, like, at least in the mainstream, people were starting to worry about this because of the end of, you know, always getting faster single-core systems. Is the complexity that exists in understanding in an automatic fashion concurrent execution.
Yeah.
And then when exceptions happen somewhere on a parallel process, getting that back to some reasonable, some state that you can understand is what I'm trying to get at. Mm-hmm. You guys are definitely making progress in this area. So let's talk about how this works.
Yeah, so if you're asking me the question. So the way the tool works is it leverages event tracing for Windows. And what we do is we collect a certain number of kernel and user events. The primary events that we consume in this tool are context switches. So these things, and thread creation and destruction events. Mm. So that allows us to understand all the threads that are running in your application and what they're doing at any given point in time. And then on top of that, we also collect sample profile events. So we can also tell you when the thread is running, what it was doing, and when it blocks, we can also tell you where it blocked. And we can often map that blocking event to a category. So we can tell you that that thread was blocked because it made a blocking I/O call, or it blocked because it made the synchronization call, or it just put itself to sleep, right? So our whole tool is based on ETW, and we do a lot of analysis, and I think we contribute significantly in terms of reporting and in terms of visualizations. The thing that's really powerful about the tool is how fast and how easy it is to find problems compared with looking at logs and, you know, very complicated instrumentation trace files.
Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean,
Well, that's actually a really important aspect of what we've done here, because by taking this tool and helping you by visualizing what's going on inside your application, first thing we help you do is really match the concepts in your mind with what's actually happening on your computer. Because very often, the concepts that you have of how your multi-threaded application is behaving is actually quite different from what's really going on. Mm. So we help you see that instead of digging, as Hazza said, instead of digging through an Excel spreadsheet or struggling with the just massive quantities of data. Mm. So with this kind of effort, the number of concepts, the concept count, if you will, is really high, and the quantity of data that you have to deal with is also very, very high. And so historically, people have done exactly that. They'll dig through an Excel spreadsheet looking for the events, right, trying to figure out what happened when thread A stopped running, why. And so instead of doing that, we present it to you in a very visual fashion, so it's quite easy to see things like load imbalances, blocking, and a number of other problems that you're going to see in a multi-threaded environment. So we've actually gotten some really good feedback from the folks that we've talked to about this tool that they believe it will help democratize this kind of profiling. They feel like they'll be able to, instead of having a very small stable of experts who are the only ones capable of looking at these profiles and figuring out what's going on, they feel they can distribute out a little bit more of that work to a few more people than they could before. They can fairly easily teach them what to look for, so they can find the fairly run-of-the-mill problems, such as a load imbalance. And then the folks who are, you know, the true hardcore experts who still have to solve the hardest problems can spend more time on them. And then the overall value is distributed more broadly across the organization.
That's excellent.
We love to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
We're pretty happy about that.
Yeah. So what were some of the challenges with pulling this off?
Yeah, so actually, I would just start from saying that in my mind, so this is not a profiler really. It's not a, basically it's a microscope. So you just look on something which is opaque, and you look X-ray or something, and suddenly you see what happens below, right? Mm. And in many, many cases, so all you need to solve the problem is just to understand general picture. And even in those cases when it's not enough, so you cannot start any useful work before you understand the general picture. So if you start, I don't know, digging into some place, it could be the wrong place, like not interesting. So I would say that it's too low of general picturing. So, so you asked what are the hardest things. So interesting to note it is that it all happens on Windows, which happens to be a very rich platform in terms of instrumentation. So basically Windows knows everything about your program. It knows when it starts, when it ends, when it stops, when threads interact, when you read the file. Windows knows it. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, it kind of knew it only for itself. But now there is log, there is ETW events about everything. So if you use proper data mining, you can find anything. So now the challenge is how to show it to people so that it is visual. That, like, you don't need to have a PhD in performance whatever to understand what's going. You just glance and you see, oh, here it is. So maybe we can just show something.
Absolutely. I mean, that screen is definitely useful.
Right. So I would offer some kind of role playing. So imagine I'm a developer in some company which does CAD/CAM or something. So I have a program which is it's called DNA. So DNA is Digital Network Analyzer. It's a sketch of real program which I wrote like 20 years ago, and it was doing like CAD/CAM analysis of PCB, like printed circuit board. So it looks on the geometry and then calculates from this electrical connectivity. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of computation on the geometry. Mm-hmm. So imagine you have this program and somebody decided that it's not quick enough. So you bought a full prop machine, it's a little bit quick, but it's not quick enough. So what is it? So people who wrote it are gone, you don't know. You look on the code is complicated, you don't know. Mm-hmm. How do you know what this happens, why it is? So, but now you suddenly remember, oh, I have this Visual Studio, which I paid a lot of money on this, and there's a lot of tools. Maybe there is something about it. Let's go there. So, okay, analyze seems interesting. So yes. I go to analyze. Okay, where should I go? Okay, launch perform. Take the first. It's concurrency problem. Why? Because, I added four CPUs, and it's not four times quicker. So let's see why. Oh, visualize. I like pictures. Let's look on the picture. Let's go to visualize. So you just run it. Take some time. Not a lot. And you see that it's doing something. And when it will finish, hopefully we will show you more than you used to see after you got execution. You basically will see the guts of the program, what it's doing. Okay, program finished.
There we go.
So it takes some time to analyze the report. In this case, it will be about a half minute probably. And then what we hope to find out is why this program is not as quick as it should be. It should be four times quicker. It's not. Okay. Why is it? Again, remember that you don't know exactly the guts of this program. You got it from somebody, you're maintaining it, you don't know.
Sure.
You just want to see. You want to see general picture of what is going on. Okay, so you get... first of all, screen is white, it's nice. So you go to just general picture. Okay, so you see that for some time it uses one CPU core, two core, sometimes even almost four cores in average, so on. So first thing you understand from here is that there are periods when it is really well parallelized and some period where it's not. Hmm. And you understand that, okay, there are probably some stages here. You don't know yet what they are, but you already know just from one glance on this picture, you already know that there are stages. So let's look on there what threads are doing here. So you see that there are a bunch of threads which are not doing anything. Hmm. And there are a bunch of threads which are doing something. So let's take this a little bit down. So each line here is a thread. So you see that, okay, in the beginning there is some small activity, and then the four threads start. They do some work, and then they stop, all of them. And then some other four threads start, and they do something, and then when last of them stop, some other four threads start. So this is probably exactly these stages which you noticed on the first one. And by the way, first thing you see immediately, if you look on this on this middle stage, which is longest of everything, so you immediately see that one thread is doing a small amount of work relatively to another one. So basically, first diagnosis is already ready. So it's just bad, uneven work distribution.
Right, so this is the first thing we talked about.
Load and balance.
Load and balance.
Boom. You already know what's wrong with the program at a high level. Boom. Go fix this and come back, talk to me later.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's not concurrent.
Right, well, not as concurrent as it could be.
It is concurrent.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, if it was...
It's concurrent, but it's not balanced.
Exactly. That's the term load balance.
If it was perfectly balanced, these would be... All the threads will finish simultaneously.
Yeah.
All right. So the point here is that in this specific case of this application, if you solve this problem, you probably can go home. Because there is nothing else to be done, right? This is the only real significant problem of this application. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so let's imagine that it's not the case, that you need to look more. If you need to look more, then as you see, so there are different colors. So each color depicts something. So what does it depict is shown below on the active legend. I'm just trying to pick. So on the left side, if you see here, you see what are these things could be doing. By the way, so let's concentrate on just one of the stages, which is the middle stage. So we can just take away all other stuff so we don't see it because we want to concentrate. Mm-hmm. So we see only these threads which we want to see. So we can hide everything which we don't want to hide. Which we don't want to see, and we concentrate, for instance, on this piece. So, by the way, if you notice, all these numbers jump all the time. So every time I change, they are recalculated. So it's active. So we're showing you numbers for the thing which is in the view now. Mm-hmm. So, by the way, so you can click on them, and if you click on them, you see the normal
sample profiler.
This is what you see, a normal sampling profiler. And but it's not only for execution. So this is sampling profiling of execution. And this would be sampling profiling on the blocking time. How much time my program was waiting here and there and so on. Mm. Or how much time it was in I.O. And how much time it was sleeping and so on. By the way, here is this nice way to think about categories. So green, I'm running. Red, I'm blocked by somebody. I'm waiting for somebody. Blue, I yielded. I said I don't want to use this core. I could, but I said that I don't want. Mm. I'm a threat. Yellow, somebody kicked me off. I would like to use it. And then there is all the specialties. UI processing, memory, and I.O. Mm. So these are the colors. So if you look on... If you look on any piece of this thing, so of course, first thing you need to you ask yourself is, okay, where does it relate to in the code? So you click any place, and you see that you get the exact stack. So basically, we show you where you are in the code, and you can see the code by just right clicking, going, and jumping there, so you know where you are. Interesting thing is to note that basically we try to create for you a dashboard, like everything which you need to see is here. You don't need to jump anywhere, and everything is live. You go to other place and you see it. We have some hints for you. So for instance, we try to generate, to collect and to glean some common patterns for what are common problems which are happen to the parallel performance. And eventually we hope to have some interesting set of patterns. Right now we have just some beginnings. Mm-hmm. So these beginnings you basically can see, we present it to you in the what we call rock gallery. Rock gallery is kind of those patterns which we know about. And for instance, we were speaking about uneven distribution, so this is the picture. Mm. So the idea is that when you looked on your specific situation, you can go to here and just flip over this thing and say, oh, is it similar to this? For instance, if it's a lot of yellow, then probably you just have too many threads. You have oversubscription. If you have too much purple, it's probably your I.O. is somehow inefficient, and so on. So we want to collect good set of these patterns. And basically we need customers' help for this. Just when you see interesting pictures, send it to us.
Absolutely.
No, seriously. Yeah, exactly. Send this picture and explain what it is, and we will be extremely happy to put it in the gallery.
And preferably send the source if you can.
Right.
Excellent. Yeah. Very interesting.
So,
very helpful.
Yeah. Right. So in general, so I don't want to spend much more time on the demo because hopefully in Beta 2 you can play with it yourself.
And we'll have screencasts.
Right. We'll also have screencasts.
And we'll cover some of this in a screencast as well, sure, so that you can follow along instead of just watching us chat about it here.
No, that's, we'll do both. That's great.
Right. But again, so returning back to why I, for instance, think why it's valuable and why I happened to jump to this group when I had the choice, is I think this is first thing which hits the developer in parallel world, to understand what's going on.
Absolutely.
Just general understanding, what is going on, that's it.
So, but I mean, let me ask a question in terms of what is going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it's a really complicated application with, I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Even then, yeah, you're going to show me these maps. But
that's a great question. So, before... before I joined this team, I've done a lot of work on performance and parallelism in the past. But before I joined this team, I was with the developer division performance engineering team.
Okay.
And part of the job was to go and understand Visual Studio, what Visual Studio is doing. Mm. When you guys get a hold of the bits, go and attach to a Visual Studio session and do something interesting with it, and you'll see how complicated applications like Visual Studio can be. So we've done some really... the reason why your question is great is because we know how complicated real apps can be. I mean, this is a really nice demo app, but it's a toy. It's good to show you the features. But real apps are much more complex than this. So here are some things that we've done to help you understand or reason about a very complicated picture that inevitably you're going to see. One is, if you've seen my PDC talk, my PDC 2008 talk, we showed these markers. We didn't ship that support for those markers in Beta 1, but in Beta 2, you're going to have the ability to instrument your application. So when you're looking at these visualizations, there will be vertical bars that are associated with parts of the application that are interesting to you. Mm-hmm. Most applications have phases. In Visual Studio, I might be, let's say I'm doing a compilation, right? There's a parsing phase and there's a code gen phase. And I can put markers in the code, the compiler code, so that when I'm visualizing a compilation, a build scenario, I can see when I'm parsing, when I'm building. So now I have a way of correlating the picture to something that I understand as a dev. So that's number one. Number two thing, Sasha showed you guys the sampling. How you can click on a green region and get a sample call stack. What was that thread doing at the time? So that's something that also helps you. You don't have to, if you don't know, if something looks curious or interesting to you, but you have no idea what part of the app you're looking at, just by clicking on those green regions, you'll get an idea what code was executing at the time. And that can help you significantly. And we also showed you how you can click to code. You can go to the source code. So if let's say you have some sequential region that's taking a long time and you're wondering, what work was I doing there? You can zoom in on that thread. And then he showed you the filtering capabilities, which are also really important for this kind of, to reduce complexity. Mm. You identify something interesting. You identify a thread that's doing something that's interesting. you filter out all the other noise. You zoom in on an area of execution that you care about, and now all these reports that we showed you are specific to the time that you chose and the threads that you chose. So we've done a lot. We've actually gone out of our way to try and make it easy for you to manage complexity.
Excellent.
But it's a great question.
That's exactly right. We want to help you to not step on it, but we want to help you simplify the complex. So filter out the stuff that's not relevant to the one thing you want to find out. So as you pointed out, as you find the threads that are important and the time and the moment in time that's critical, you can filter everything else out, as Sasha did in the demo today, and really zoom in on exactly what you want to see. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you can do other things. You can filter out for just my code. You can filter out events that are below some threshold of noise in terms of the reporting, so that you can very easily and relatively easily zoom in and really figure out what's going on. So again, you might want to tell the story about the codec folks that you were working with in terms of helping them find their problem,
yeah.
which had to do with camera speed, not code speed.
Yeah, so
they were able to prove it wasn't their issue.
Nice. Yeah, the two examples of two groups here at Microsoft that we've been able to help using the tool. One group was trying to do writing a codec, and they wanted to do real-time, high-definition encoding, of video encoding. And they ran some tests, and they were failing miserably. They wanted to do it at like 24 frames per second.
Okay.
High-definition video, 24 frames per second in real-time. And they were failing miserably, and they wanted to know why. And they tried all the tools that they could get a hold of. They tried the profiling tools that we have. They tried VTune, you know, the tool from Intel for performance analysis. And they were desperate for help. They could not figure out what was going on.
Okay.
In a half-hour session with one of their devs, we were able to narrow down. We were able to prove that their codec is capable of doing 90 frames per second at VGA resolution, and he was seeing like 20 or 25 at VGA, which was also pretty bad for them,
sure.
because they were shooting for high def. And we were also able to show them that the actual bottleneck that was preventing, and this was a parallel codec, by the way, the bottleneck was waiting for the frame data, the bits from the camera, to get to the codec so that the software can encode
it. So the result is go buy a faster camera and you're
yeah.
going to have
yeah.
a beautiful
yeah.
result.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
you need is a better camera.
Interesting.
So that was one example.
Right on.
And yeah. then there was another example that was also pretty powerful that didn't take much time to figure out. I visited our customer service and support guys, and they have a tool that they use to track customer calls. And that tool has responsiveness problems. You know, it gets the ring of death every now and then, and it bothers them. And they wanted to know why. So we decided, let's throw our tool at that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And within 10 minutes, we were able to discover that some of these multi-second hiccups in the user interface were caused by the fact that the UI thread was making network accesses and blocking. Which is a big no-no, right?
Sure.
You don't do this kind of stuff on the UI thread. What you do is you have another slave thread do this kind of work, this kind of blocking work on your behalf to keep the UI responsive.
Absolutely.
So we know we have high confidence that this tool is going to help us and others solve some real problems. So,
absolutely.
But we really want your feedback.
Yeah, but actually, I think both of these examples, and plus we can add a few more probably, showing the same thing, that first thing which needs to be done, you need to take this secrecy from the parallel execution. It stops to be mystery. Mm-hmm. And like you can guess and build theories about why this and this, it's all not nearly as good as just seeing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
Right on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to, is we really hope this tool will help you see what's going on inside your multi-threaded applications and begin to really match the mental model with the visual model with the data model based on your code, so that we get you to your code. Another thing we didn't get a chance to talk about yet really is the call site feature. So when you right click on something in a report, not only can you go to code, you can also go to call site. So we'll give you a list of every place in your program that's calling that routine.
Nice.
And then we sort that based on where you're spending the most time, so you can very quickly track things back. to the point in time where you're being held up and your performance is suffering.
Yeah, basically, what Bill described is just part of the general set of the facilities which we try to put for you to connect these colors to the real lines of the code. For instance, one other thing is files. Like, because we know when you're writing and reading to the file, we can go to the file and we can just you can just find where you're writing this file.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that, but we also have lanes for the physical disk devices on your machine, and we can show you which files are being read or written to and how long it took and things like that.
Okay.
So we cover the I.O. scenario very nicely, and I.O. is a big deal.
Sure it is.
A big source of performance hiccups.
But it can't always be solved by software design. I mean, it's a hardware problem.
Hardware, exactly. It's a physics problem. What you can do about it is exploit parallelism by overlapping that, hiding that physics problem by doing other useful work in the meantime.
Sure.
But the reports that Bill was mentioning do give you a way of prioritizing your work. Let's say you have a picture like this with a lot of red.
Mm-hmm.
There might be multiple sources of delay in your application, synchronization delay in this case.
Okay.
Multiple sources, right? How do I know which one I should go spend my effort on? The reports, the way the reports are organized and the way we sort them, allows you a way of prioritizing your work. We show you the biggest sources of delay first, mm-hmm. right? And that's also a really difficult thing to do without a tool like this.
Absolutely.
How do I know where to start? I have lots of logs in my code. Which one is the one that's causing most damage? We solve that problem for you, and we tell you where in the code it's at.
Cool.
Can't do more
that's
than
excellent.
That.
That's excellent.
So one more thing, just want to add to the same line, is that in my personal kind of experience is that whatever you think about how your program works, it's wrong. So it works different way, right? For instance, you write a file. You think that, okay, and then probably I should see this operation of the file somewhere close to when I write.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. It's sometime later on. The operating system decided to do it later on. How do you guess about it?
Yeah. No, you don't.
You don't know. So if you want to know what really happens, the only way is to gather solid facts. But if there is a mountain of facts, you cannot do anything with this.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way which makes this mountain of facts eatable is nice picture.
Absolutely.
So basically what we're
Absolutely.
Just about this. This is, for anything non-trivial that I've ever looked at, right? No matter how much I knew, even if I wrote the code myself, unless it's really trivial, it's always surprising. You always discover something interesting that you did not realize mm-hmm. when you take a look at the picture. And this applies to all the guys that we've helped.
Absolutely.
I think they've all noticed things that were curious mm-hmm. to them. No matter how expert, like you can imagine how many millions of code there are in Visual Studio, for example.
Yeah.
There's not a single person at Microsoft that understands all those millions of lines of code.
I'm sure
that
not.
That is true, though. And, you know, as people see these visualizations of their code for the very first time, there's kind of this universal, immediate leaning forward into the screen going, hey, what's that? Kind of. It definitely, as Sasha and Hazen were saying, the light kind of goes on and you say, wow, what does this mean? And that's not what I thought was going to happen. And,
exactly.
Okay, how do I tune this and cause it to behave differently? I think one of the other things I also want to mention while we're in here chatting about this is that as we've developed these new programming models to support parallelism with TPL and PPL for native and managed code and everything. Of course, this particular tool works both on native and managed code. And as you're adopting those new programming models, we also provide markers so that you can see where those parallel loops are forming and you can see what kind of work is being done inside of them. And sort of to that point, as I was helping someone with a demo around that, we had the markers in the program and they were changing some parameters and the amount of work being done inside the parallel loop, it was a nested parallel loop, in fact, the amount of work inside that nested parallel loop got smaller and smaller and smaller, so his performance wasn't scaling appropriately, and what we were able to determine was that inside some of those parallel loops, it was a matter of microseconds. So at some point, there's this diminishing returns, right? Should I parallelize this work or not? Maybe I need to parallelize different sized chunks. And so he was able to go from a scaling factor of 0.9 to a scaling factor of like 1.7 fairly quickly by optimizing based on how big those chunks of work ought to be based on the data that was feeding in.
Excellent.
So there is some flexibility that you may also want to add. And as you're looking for, you know, how do I take my existing program and then move it forward to the new programming models, we can help you even if you haven't done that yet. So as you're looking at your existing code that you've been struggling with and parallelizing today, mm-hmm. we can help you with that right now. And then as you're thinking about how to move it forward and add these new programming models, we can help you along the way as well by, again, giving you those visual representations of what you see as you go there.
That's really important.
Yep. Absolutely. And I mean, clearly a side effect of all of this is you're going to be educating developers to actually design their code better, because in the real world, yep. I want to write my code and have it scale from 8 cores to 1,000 cores, because there will be 1,000 cores someday
sure.
if they can figure out the caching issues.
That's going to be a lot of threats to view. We'll have that problem
as
we get there.
And that's
an interesting scaling problem for
us. I could see a cool fractal game we could play with this, right? We could then attach to this.
That's actually an interesting idea.
Yeah. But, can you show one small picture just on the screen?
Sure.
So this is how we think about this tool. It's eye opener. It's Microsoft.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is our icon.
Yeah. I think about it differently. I think about it as some guy, a medical student doing anatomy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dissecting.
Sure.
Yeah. A Windows process and looking at the guts.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Internals.
Yeah, and I want to add to that that again, at for this release, what we've really focused on is being as accurate as we possibly can in showing you what's going on. So we're focused on being the best possible microscope or being the best possible Gray's Anatomy manual to show you what's really in front of you. Mm-hmm. And so the Rogues Gallery is kind of our first attempt at beginning to offer some guidance based on common patterns and visual representation. So the piece of the automated piece, if you will, of getting from what you see to what it means, we're not able to do that, especially in this release. But somewhere down the road, it will be nice to provide some automated guidance. So right now, we're just focused on providing an excellent representation of what you see so that you can fairly quickly get an understanding of what it is you're looking at. And then the Rogues Gallery, we believe, will help you sort of recognize common patterns. And the more of those patterns that we have coming in, the more we'll be able to present people and show them things that they can solve quickly.
Excellent.
Plus, additionally to this problem, what can be that these pictures are concise and small, so you can send them in mail. So, and you can discuss them. You mm-hmm. you can look at them, point finger, and say and speak with somebody about what it means.
Yeah.
So our hope is that people will start kind of capturing these traces, pictures, and then showing them to some experts and getting advice just from looking at the picture. Oh, probably you have something like this.
Mm-hmm. And we will have multiple ways that people can communicate with us.
Certainly. Speaking of ways to communicate with us, right now there are already forums out there, obviously on MSDN. We have our homepage, msdn.com/concurrency.
Perfect.
We've got lots and lots of content there, and we'll continue to post more content there. Mm-hmm. We also today have forums online right now for Beta 1. There will be more forums online for Beta 2. And typically we're in the VSTS space on the forums. There's also concurrency forums. So wherever you post, we'll find the information and do our very best to be responsive and to get back to it. And hopefully you can, I'm not sure exactly how this works, but hopefully they can upload snapshots into the forums to say, hey, I saw this. What does this mean?
That would be great.
I have a blog as well.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd be more than happy to respond to any requests and
Perfect.
Relay them to the team.
Sure.
And we'll put that
I
URL
blog about
the
R2.
Great.
So.
Great.
You know a thing or two about your tool?
Yeah, I think so.
So one thing that comes to mind would be like being able to take a very interesting snapshot and just sending it up to a service.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not have the delay of like a PM and Redmond look through it. I mean, just send it up to a public service and have the community.
We're thinking about that. That's cloud computing. Frankly, I don't think
it's a secret thing to say, but inside of Microsoft, we're trying to do exactly this thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and actually, we launched it today.
But I have to ask one more sort of technical question in the sense that the big hoopla these days is cloud computing, which is just distributed computing over the Internet.
Yes.
That's a super hard problem. So let's say that I take this computation and I want to run it on 100,000 nodes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How does a tool like this going to be able to scale to that model? It's not designed for that, is it? Or is it?
No, this release is not designed for that.
I always have to ask that.
But I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
but it's the future, man.
Absolutely, we are getting into that future.
Of course you are.
As we speak. Today we were talking about how we're going to scale clusters and things like that and what we can do.
It's a super hard problem.
Yeah, so No, this release is about a single node getting the best performance out of a multi-core node.
So perfect.
And then the next cycles will get into bigger things.
Sure. I would say though that you know, if you're going to deploy something to a cluster or to the cloud, you need to make sure that what you're deploying is deployment worthy, right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of thinking about how those individual nodes should operate, you could certainly apply this tool to that. And we've actually applied this tool to some interesting MPI problems for HPC.
Cool.
So that, for example, if you're looking at a specific node and your particular thread on that specific node, you can see the MPI communications, for example. So we've added some new some additional API the APIs that we recognize in our tool. So speaking of which, there's a whole bunch of new things in Beta 2 that aren't in Beta 1. There are a lot of usability improvements. We spent a lot of time, we invested a lot of energy in understanding how to make this interface more user-friendly. And so if you've looked at the Beta 1 tool, which is a great Beta 1 offering, and then load up the Beta 2 version, you'll see significant improvements in the utility of the tool and the approachability of the features.
Yeah, these guys have done a great job. You know, they joined relatively recently, but they've done an outstanding job. And you'll see the difference between what we've done in Beta 1 and what we've done in Beta 2, thanks to these guys coming on board. And
we've had a good team to help us. It's more than just the
Of course.
There's a whole bunch of great folks behind this. It's a whole team effort.
I mean,
it's a fun place to work.
Oh, totally, man. Then Burton Smith wanders around here.
He does.
That's good stuff. He's a super nice dude, man.
He is.
So, well, the final question is, are you guys going to have sort of a support service, in the sense that I think developers aren't going to like what they see? Because this will be the first time maybe many developers...
Yes.
So I'm kidding. Because I may go, be very proud of this app that I'm writing, let's say, you know, something like Channel 9. And then I do like a... Channel 9 is a bad example, it's a website, but you get my point. And I look at it, and I'm like, oh... All this
red, so much work
yellow,
to do now.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I think it's a good thing.
Well, so the good thing is that we report the truth.
Yeah.
It's good for you to know the truth.
Yeah.
But it's also good for you to know that there needs to be a discipline. If your application is meeting its goals in terms of performance, well, yeah, the truth might be ugly, but it might be fine. Mm-hmm. But if you really need to do some work, we've given you a really nice tool to help you figure out at least where you should be investing your energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if people are banging on your door demanding greater performance, this will give you a great list to start with, a prioritized list of things that you could do that should fairly quickly improve your performance, right? So that's the nice thing, is you'll get some idea of where to start when people are demanding greater speed and throughput.
Now, is there a way... Look, the fact of the matter is that most developers aren't like you guys, right? I know there's a 26-way machine, and so I can't remember the name of the gentleman who I interviewed a while ago, but most of us have two cores, man.
Mm-hmm.
So is there some tooling, at least in the pipeline or in the thinking, where I could kind of profile, sort of, not profile, but, you know, kind of extend into the future how my app would look in a certain context via virtualization or something? I mean, I'd like to know what this code that I have running on my dev box that has two or four cores would look like on 16 or, you know, 32.
Well,
I'll start,
and then maybe the other guys can jump in. I think, first of all, if you've got a multi-threaded app that's behaving well on a dual-core machine, that's a tough environment to run a multi-threaded app because you've only got two cores to play with. But if you've got it behaving well there, and then you know, and you've got a four-core, again, four-cores are becoming more and more common.
You can
actually get a nice four-core machine from major brand manufacturers in a laptop at this point. It's a fairly high price point to get into that, but on the desktop, it's much less expensive.
Sure.
So the quad cores are becoming fairly mainstream on the desktop. So there are plenty of opportunities to play. And then again, if you've got it behaving well in that environment, there's always the chance that as you hit, you know, more than, say, 4 to 8 cores, you begin to sort of fall off a cliff performance-wise. But maybe, Hazem, you could speak to that, or Sasha, you can talk to the best way to deal with that.
Were you asking about predicting
the prediction?
Yeah,
the prediction part.
So if this looks beautiful on four cores,
yes,
it's all green and glorious and everything,
it doesn't mean anything.
No, don't get me wrong.
But it doesn't mean that it's going to be as pretty when you throw more cores at it, because
things
like synchronization, contention for locks will increase as you add more threads to the problem, and contention can increase in exponential ways. The delay times can increase exponentially, not linearly. So what used to be green might start getting shades of red, mm-hmm. and things like that. And these are the typical scalability things that are...
This will show you that.
You'll see it.
But the only thing is that not all green is equally green. Some of this green is just true. Kind of service
time,
which not used to work, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's exactly. Higher than possible. I think the other thing, you talked about virtualization, and yeah. I think the way I think about it is it's easier to virtualize a machine with fewer cores than your physical box has, but it's really hard to virtualize a machine with more cores than your physical box has. And so I think that's another area of challenge. We're looking for the predictive capability that we just chatted about. And then this issue of virtual machines I think are interesting. We do face some interesting challenges as we try to operate on virtual machines with this particular tool based on timing issues because we're right in the hardware and the metal. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly something you can try, but typically it works better if you're tying a specific number of cores to your virtual machine. It helps maintain those timing sensitivities, if I got that correct, Azim.
I think we can't guarantee, because of virtualization of timers,
mm-hmm. yeah, that's
we can't guarantee that the tool will work perfectly on top of a hypervisor, a guest OS. Mm-hmm. So to make sure that you have a perfect experience, you should be running on the native OS.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that it'll always fail. I mean, we know that a lot of people use it today on top of a VM and it works fine. But it's not guaranteed, and that's something that people should know about.
And we don't recommend to do it.
We don't recommend doing it.
We don't recommend using it on VM because we're just not ready for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Well, so glad we got to that.
Yeah, right? I wanted to make sure we touched on that.
So now they can't get back and say, well, it doesn't work on virtualization, man.
Exactly.
Watch this video.
It's tough. Yeah exactly. So that's
cool.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. And hey, Niners, use this stuff. I'm sure they'll provide plenty of feedback for you.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Great job, guys.
Thank you very much.
Very interesting.
Cool. Okay.
Thank you.